On page 362, Perek Yud Gimel. Pasik Ches, we're going to start. Yes. Vigadut Olavincha. This is speaking about, and as we said, this is one of the first parshias in the Tefillin. The Tefillin has four boxes with four parshias. The hand Tefillin also have four parshias. The difference, though, is that in the hand Tefillin, all... Happy New Year. In the hand tefillin, the four parshiyos, the four paragraphs of the Chumash, are written on one long parchment. It's written... No, four paragraphs. You see, if you see chapter 13, if you turn back to 360, yeah? So, three lines in the bottom of the page... And 360, so Vedaba Shema Moshe Lemer. Okay. That is one paragraph until 362, where you see the paragraph ends in Pasik Yud. Okay. The paragraph starts there, 360, and it goes for 10 sentences. That is the first paragraph that's in the Tefillin. The second paragraph that's in the Tefillin is from sentence 11 until through 16, until the end of the Parsha. Okay. So this is two paragraphs. It's not two whole portions of the Chumash.
Until the end of the parasha.
From the, chapter 13, okay, is two parashiyos of the Chum, of the Tefillin. Through Pasuk Yud is one, and from Yud Aleph until Tezayin is the second. Then you have Shema, the first paragraph of Shema, and Vahoyim Shemoah. Okay? So these are the four parashiyos that you have in the Tefillin. Now, in the hand Tefillin, they're written on one long piece of parchment. That means they write Parsha 1, then Parsha 2, Parsha 3, Parsha 4. But it's on one long, that they roll up, and they put into the hand box. Okay, then they sew it up with veins. In the head tefillin, you also have these four parshias, but they're, each one is written separately, and they're put into the head, which has four compartments.
The same exact thing
that's on the hand, is in the head, except in the hand it's written on one long sheet of parchment, all four. And the head, there are four different ones, and each one has its own compartment that you put it into. The difference between Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam and the other opinions is, what is the order of the parshias? That's the whole difference. Everybody agrees that they have four parshias in the Tefillin. The only argument is, what's the order? Is it A, B, C, D, or B, C, D, whatever? I mean, whatever the argument is, what? The head tefillin is more holy because it's four boxes rather than one. The head tefillin have the shin on it. And we'll learn, it's interesting, if you look at the shin, one side, a normal shin has three diagonal lines. If you look at the Chumash, you see a shin, shmeis, right? You see the shin has three. One side of the head tefillin has four. If you look in the head tefillin, maybe afterwards we'll take out a pair of tefillin, you see. Well, together they make sense, but that's not the point. The point is it internal or external? Meaning, when you have three lines of a shin, right? So, basically, the shin is made with three lines. But inside, you only have two parts. If you have a four shin, if this is a four shin, then you have really, here, three. So then you have an inside shin. So it's either an outside shin or an inside shin. It has to do a lot with the Kabbalah things of the three and the four, whatever. The different levels of a shin, you know. But the shin is on the head tefillin, which makes the head tefillin, and besides the fact that the head tefillin is four boxes, and the hand tefillin is one box, so therefore it's really holier. And you should know that the head tefillin, by the way, is four boxes. It's just stuck together. But they're really four, it's not one box just made with grooves in it. It's actually four boxes stuck together. Yeah, because some of them, only the head is different, not the hand. You know, it's different opinions of what the orders are. So anyway, so these are the four paragraphs that are in the Shema. Okay, so We're middle of the first paragraph of the Shema still. V'gadat levincha, this pasuk we started last time. V'gadat levincha, you should talk, tell your son. And as we said, that the reason why the Torah uses the word v'gadat is because it's actually a mitzvah of talking. And meaning also that even if there is no son, and there's nobody around, you live alone, you also have a mitzvah of talking the concept of Yetzias Mitzrayim. Bayema hu lema on that day, bavurza also Hashem li b'tzeisim Mitzrayim. So the Mefarshim explained that this pasuk, from beginning to end, basically refers to the Eina Yodea Lishol, the kid that doesn't know how to ask. Because in a few psukim we're going to learn, ki yishalcha bincha macha lemer, if your son will ask you, then you tell him. Here the Torah doesn't say your son's going to ask you. The Torah just says, tell him. Now obviously if you're telling him without being asked, you're talking about a son that doesn't know how to ask. So this pasuk refers to the Eina Yodea Lishol, the child that doesn't know how to ask. So the Torah says you have to open up your mouth to him. Which in a very interesting Chabad style, so to speak, this is the source of the concept of Kiruv. Of Kiruv, bringing people closer to Yiddishkeit. What does it mean? Many people, now recently everybody changed, but years ago, before the Kiruv movement became popular in all circles, but it was a tradition in many places. What do you mean? You go out to the world and teach Yiddishkeit. If somebody comes to you and they ask you a question, then you can answer them. But to go out to the world and put on tefillin with them and go out to find a Jew and start talking about Yiddishkeit, it's not the Jewish thing to do, so to speak. Yeah, they didn't believe in advertising Yiddishkeit. They said, you know, if somebody came to you and asked a question, okay, you have to answer the question, but not to go out, especially not to go out of your way in the street where who knows what's there and so on and so forth. So this pasuk is really telling you that's not what it's all about. The pasuk is saying, v'gadat levincha, and children doesn't only mean your physical, biological children, means students, anybody is called, you know, children. So it says, v'gadat levincha, you have to go out to the person that doesn't know how to ask. And you can't wait for them to come to you, because if they don't know how to ask, they'll never come to you. So therefore, what do you have to do? You have to be the one that goes out to them. V'gadat levincha, you have to tell your son, this is what it's all about. So this is basically a, so to speak, a source of the concept of having to go out and not wait for people just to come to you. Because that's no good. We don't go out to proselytize to get goyim. Jews believe if Hashem made a person a goy, he has his mission in life, he is supposed to live as a goy, except, you know, the seven Noahic laws, which a Jew has an obligation to see that a goy keeps them, and he should do it in a way that the goy stays a goy. That's why if a goy comes to convert, you push him away initially, because we don't want him to convert.
But if a goy comes to ask a Jew, why blah, 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 blah?
If it's things pertaining to his mitzvahs, you have to tell him.
Yeah.
You have an obligation to tell him. The Rambam writes that a Jew has an obligation to go to a goy and make sure he keeps the seven mitzvahs. And the Rebbe came out with a campaign many years ago. The Rebbe said, based on that Rambam, that Jews have an obligation to go out to goyim to make sure the goyim keep the seven Noahic laws. So people ask the Rebbe, this is a new thing. It was never done in history. It was never done in Europe. It was never done, you know, for thousands of years it wasn't done. And all of a sudden the Rebbe is making up a new thing that you have to go to see a goy. So the Rebbe said, first of all, it's not a new thing. The Rambam writes. The Rambam paskins that a Jew has an obligation to make sure that a goy keeps the seven Noahic laws. Number one. And the Rebbe said, why wasn't it done in earlier generations? So the Rebbe said, just think for a minute. In the earlier generation, there was anti-Semitism. And the goyim were in control. So it was hard enough for a Jew to live like a Jew. If a Jew in Russia, in communist Russia, went to the goyim, to Stalin, said, hey Stalin, by the way, you know you have to keep yourself, they'll kill him. The goyim would kill the Jew. A Jew is not obligated to give up his life to teach a goy the seven Noahic laws. But the Rebbe writes, in a country like America where there's freedom, where you don't get killed for teaching a non-Jew, you know, his seven Noahic laws, the Rambam writes there's an obligation for a Jew to make sure that a goy keeps the seven mitzvahs.
What is those seven? You cannot kill an animal?
Well, there's seven basic ones. and they branch off into over 20. You know, there's offshoots. Mm-hmm. But if you want to remember the seven way, the mitzvahs, it's Aleph, Beis, Gimel, Dalet, Hei, Vav, Zayin. No, this Aleph stands for Eiver Minachai. A guy cannot eat a live limb off an animal. A guy just can't rip off a polka from a chicken, you know, a piece of leg from a chicken and eat it. That's number one. Beis stands for Birchas Hashem, which is really opposite. They're not allowed to curse God. But we don't want to say cursing God, so you say blessing God. The third one, Gimel, goes according to the Aleph Beis. Gimel is Gzela, stealing. You're not allowed to steal. Dalid is dinim. They have to establish courts. That's the only positive mitzvah that non-Jew has, to set up a judiciary system. Hey is hariga, can't kill. Hariga. Vav is v'idas znus, adultery. And zayin is zara, which is aveda zara. So if you think Aleph Beis, Gimel, Dalet, Hey, Vav, Zayin, you have all the seven acronyms for the seven Noahite laws. But they better stealing it, branches off into a few, idol worship, you know, they branch off into a few. What?
The record, by that thing, they're doing Avodah Zarah.
If what?
Because they believe in certain things that they believe.
A guy is allowed to believe in certain things that a Jew can't. But let's not get into the...
Yeah,
B'nai Noach, they call themselves. Became popular, B'nai Noach, that they go out and teach Goyim the seven Noahite laws. And a lot of them are Goyim, by the way, that do that.
Yeah, like
yeah. Okay, now in Pasuk Tes is the first time in Chumash when he talks about the mitzvah of tefillin. It should be for you a sign on your hand, and a remembrance between your eyes. That what? That ki biyad chazaka, that with a strong hand, that the Torah of Hashem should be in your mouth, and we'll soon see what that means. Ki biyad chazaka, because with a strong hand, hitziyecha Hashem in Mitzrayim, Hashem took you out of Egypt. Okay? So he's asking, what should be? He's saying, it should be a sign. What should be a sign? So he says, Rashi says, of the previous pasuk. The pasuk is speaking about the going out of Egypt. So he says, that should be for a sign on your hand. So the Torah basically is connecting the concept of Yetzias Mitzrayim to Tefillin. Because the Torah is speaking about Yetzias Mitzrayim. Then the Torah says, V'hoyo l'cho l'esa yotcho, should be for you a sign. And a remembrance between your eyes, that the Torah of Hashem should be beficho in your mouth. Okay? Because with a strong hand, Hashem took you out of Egypt. Now, there's a lot of issues over here. First of all, we see tefillin is called a sign. L'chol la'is. Tefillin should be a sign. That's why Shabbos, we don't wear tefillin. Because if you look in Chumash, it's a very strange thing. It doesn't say anywhere in Chumash you put on tefillin every day. Just put on tefillin. It doesn't say how often. Once a week, once a month, once a year, once a... The Torah just says, wear tefillin. The Torah doesn't say every day. Yeah, number one. Number two, why Shabbos don't we wear tefillin? Or Yom Tov we don't wear tefillin. So the answer...
Carrying?
No. In the shul, it's not carrying.
So who established that we wear tefillin 6 days a week and not Shabbos, not Yom Tov?
Moshe Rabbeinu at Har Sinai, which was transmitted orally until the Gemara was written. Now, the reason why we don't wear tefillin on Shabbos is because the Torah says tefillin is a sign. And Shabbos, the Torah says, ki eis hi b'ni uvein b'nei Yisrael. Shabbos is a sign. So if you have the sign of Shabbos, then you don't need the sign of tefillin. If you don't have the sign of Shabbos or Yom Tov, so then you need the sign of tefillin. That's the whole argument. Do you wear tefillin on Chol HaMoed or not? Because Chol HaMoed is in between. So the question is it Chol or is it Moed? So some people, some poskim write, it's Chol. So therefore it's not a real sign. So therefore you need to wear tefillin on Chol HaMoed. And the Hasidic world and most of the other people today in the world say, no, Chol HaMoed is also Moed, is also Yom Tov. And therefore, you don't wear tefillin on Chol HaMoed either. But there's an interesting thing. If you ever notice, the head tefillin, you don't have any coverings over it. The head tefillin is uncovered. The hand tefillin, number one, you have that little black box you put on top of the hand tefillin. Number two, many people cover this hand with this. Yeah. So many people even put the sleeve, if it fits, into the mamish, put the sleeve of the jacket over the tefillin, that you don't even see the tefillin before.
I have a little black box over my shel rosh.
Not when you wear it.
And I don't have it when I wear the shel yad.
Okay, maybe she got one. You don't need it.
No, that's the way my rabbi taught
me. Okay. It fell off. No, you know why you wear the black thing? To protect the tefillin. Shouldn't get the
damage.
Shouldn't get, no, it's not taloch.
So why not on the
one second. Because, if you look in the pasuk, what does the Torah say? Not only that, do you know there are people, you ever see people when they put on the hand tefillin, they'll cover it with their jacket. When they make the brach, they'll cover it with the talis or the jacket. Why do you do that? So some people will tell you because of, you know, the arm is uncovered. So it's not modesty, so to speak. Because normally you're supposed to wear sleeves until the elbow, like. So this is, so you cover it when you're making the bracha. So it's so to speak, more modest as far as the hand goes. But other poskim write because of this pasuk. Because if you look in the pasuk, it says, L'chol la'esayotcha, it should be for you a sign. It's for you, not for anybody else. By the head tefillin, it doesn't say ulezikaron for you between your eyes. And later on, when the Torah says also speaking about the head tefillin, the Torah speaks about the nation seeing the tefillin. But all kolam yadat, they should see the tefillin. So therefore, the halacha is the head tefillin is not supposed to be covered. The hand tefillin could, or some people say should be covered, but it could be covered. And some poskim write, the reason why you cover the tefillin when you make the bracha on the hand, because it should be for you a sign. For you a sign means it's not public, it's for you. That's why the hand tefillin could be covered. Now, here it's spelled, if you look at the word yodcha here, it's spelled yud dalid langecha for chof safit. In the next parsha, the next few psukim, if you look in pasuk 16, on the next page, again, it says the same thing, v'hoyo la'ois al yodcha. But over there, it's spelled yud dalet chaf hei. It's not spelled yodcha with a long chaf. Right? It's spelled with a chaf hei. What's the difference? From there, the Gemara learns out a different thing. What hand do you put the tefillin on?
Left.
Why left? Where do you get to? So where does it say you need the weaker hand?
Because it's nearer your heart?
Because Yod Cha, not here. In the next one, Yod, Yad, Chof Hei, in Hebrew, Keha is the weaker hand. Keha means weaker. So, not in this pasuk. In the next pasuk, it says, Yod Cha, Yod Dalet Chof Hei. So the fact that it says Chof Hei, even though normally Yod Cha is spelled with a long Chof at the end, it teaches us it should be Yad, Keha, the weaker hand. So the Gemara learns out that tefillin goes on the weaker hand. Now the question is, what is the definition of a weaker hand? So, by a normal, I'm sorry.
Average person.
By an average man. By an average person, the left hand is weaker. And therefore, by the way, it's interesting, in halacha, a left-handed's left hand is called his right hand in halacha. It's interesting. If you learn halacha, halacha calls the left-handed hand of a left-handed person it's his right hand. Because right means the stronger one, and left, in a halachic sense, means the weaker one. Therefore, for instance, like we know, when you make kiddush, you hold the kiddush cup in your right hand. A left-handed person holds it in the left hand. We hold the lulav in the right hand when you make the bracha. Yeah. A left-handed person holds the lulav in his left hand. Yeah.
since we're on the subject, Rabbi, is it true that the left-handed person is not allowed in the Beit HaMikdash?
No, not allowed. A Kohen who's left-handed wasn't able to work in the Beit HaMikdash.
Right,
it's considered a blemish. Let's not get into it's a left-handed. They'll get sued soon.
The difference between left-handed and right-handed. What's the difference?
I don't know. Yes, God. But that was...
He's busy.
By the way, you should know, in the old, not that this is going to change the halacha and Torah, yeah. But 50 years ago, in the world, it was like, if a kid was writing with the left hand, or doing the mother and the father would right away change it to the right hand and try to force the kid to write with, yeah, why? Because in the olden times, it was considered a blemish of some sort. I don't know why, but the fact is, years ago, nowadays they say don't do it. You know, if a kid's left-handed, let him be left-handed.
That makes it smarter than anyone.
When?
Rabbi, the teacher.
One second.
Thank you for the compliment.
Left-handed people are smarter.
Very smart, yes. Yes.
It is Charles Sunday.
Better examples. Yes.
Thank you for the compliment.
My daughter and my son-in-law, both of them, they are left-handed.
Yeah, the Rebbe was right-handed or left-handed?
Left-handed.
The Rebbe was as right as they get. Think about it.
Rabbi, apropos of right and left hand, in the public schools in New York, the teachers would hit you if you wrote with your left hand. They would take a ruler and hit you over the left hand.
Now they get sued for that.
Pardon?
Now they would get sued if they did that.
Well, I don't know about now. I'm not there now.
Okay. So, we're going to see a lot of interesting things with the tefillin. That, you know, we take things for granted. You know, we take things, okay, you put one on the left hand. Why? Because we learn it out from this, the Gemara learns it out, not from this pasuk, but in pasuk 16, where it says, Yadacha, Yadke, you have to do it with the left hand. But now, while we're on the subject here, let's just make it a complete picture. What is the definition of the weaker hand in halacha? As far as tefillin goes. And there's an interesting uniqueness by tefillin, different than every other thing. Because if you look in Shema, don't forget there's four parshiyos in the Torah that talk about tefillin. The one we're learning now, the next paragraph, Shema and Vahoyim Shemaya. These talk about tefillin. And that's why they're in the tefillin. Now, in Shema we say as follows, Ukshartam la'osa yadecha, time for a sign on your hand. L'totofo is ben enecha, for a thing between your eyes. Ornament between your eyes. And then the Torah says, Uchsaftam amezuzis b'secho v'yisharecha. You should write the mezuzas. So the Gemara learns, the fact that the Torah is connecting, tying the tefillin to the next pasuk of writing, the definition of right-handed and left-handed is depending on which hand you write with. Meaning, if you write with the right hand, you are considered right-handed. If where do we learn out writing from? Because in the Shema, the Torah says, "Ukshartam lo'isa yodecho," bind the tefillin, and right away the Torah says, "Write the mezuzah." So we're likening writing to binding. So the Torah says, if you write with your right hand, you're considered right-handed. If you write with your left hand, you're considered left-handed. So that's basically the accepted halacha. The only big argument that exists in halacha, which applies today and it's not uncommon, what happens if somebody writes with his right and does everything else with the left? Or he writes with the left and literally does everything else with his right. So now what din does he have? What are you doing? There's a lot of people like that. A lot. There's a lot of people like that. So, there's an interesting argument between the Alter Rebbe and the Tzemach Tzedek. The Alter Rebbe holds, it goes completely by writing. That's it. It doesn't matter if you do everything else with the left. The Tzemach Tzedek disagrees with the Alter Rebbe. It's one of the few times the Tzemach Tzedek argued against the Alter Rebbe. And the Tzemach Tzedek holds, if you do everything else, then you don't go by writing. But if you do, let's say, writing with the right and a few other things with the right, even though you do many other things with the left, I'll give you an example. You have people that write with the right, and they'll throw with the left. Mm-hmm. But they'll eat with the right. I mean, so they'll do, like, something's right, something's left, you know. So then, you go primarily by writing. The only argument is, if you write with one and everything else with the left, with the opposite. So then the shaila is, what are your right hand and left hand? We pass on like the Alter Rebbe in this case, for whatever reason. And the halacha is, we go completely by writing. But I know people that because they had the shaila, after davening, they put tefillin on the other hand, without a bracha, and say Shema. So if they wear Rashi Rebbe Natam, they put on four tefillins every day. Yeah. Two Rashi and two Rebbe Natam. First they daven on one hand, then after davening they'll switch it to the other hand without a bracha and say the Shema, and then they'll do the same thing with Rebbe Natam's tefillin. But this is also derived from the concept of, you know, writing and not. So he says as follows. Now there's one more thing over here that the Gemara learns out, a very important halacha from this pasuk. It says, L'mantia teres Hashem b'fich. Oh, by the way, before we even got to that one, Bein Einecha literally means between your eyes. Now, as we know, we don't wear tefillin here. The Korites, who didn't believe in the oral Torah, they just took Torah literally, they used to wear tefillin here. Because the Torah says, between your eyes is right here. The Chachamim learned from Moshe Rabbeinu orally handed down the oral tradition, that Bein Einecha doesn't mean here, it means here between your eyes. Meaning not here, not here, you know, not on the back of the head. It has to be up on the area where the brain is, because tefillin symbolize binding your mind and heart to God. So the tefillin have to be here, downwards between your eyes. But not like they took it literally, mamish between the eyes.
You mentioned one time before, I forgot, why is it that you repeat it in the Shema twice? Yalecha and Bein Einecha. You repeat it twice, one in the first paragraph.
Because that's what it says in the paragraph.
I mean, the question is, why does he have to repeat it?
The Torah is repeating four times, here twice and two twice later. No. Right? Because each one talks about tefillin. And each one talks about Yetzias Mitzrayim. And like we mentioned, interestingly, in the desert, we mentioned this already a while ago, in the desert, they didn't have the Parsha Shema and Vahoyim Shemaya. Shema and Vahoyim Shemaya are in the book of Dvarim. Moshe Rabbeinu said Dvarim in the 40th year, right before he died. Yeah. That means they didn't have Shema and Vahoyim Shemaya yet. So what did they have in the tefillin? This they had already, these two. Because these two were told in Egypt before they even left Egypt. But the other two of Shema and Vahoyim Shemaya, they didn't have. So many of the Rishonim write that they had two parshas in the tefillin. And they write that the head tefillin had four boxes, but only two empty. Or two full. Not two empty, two full. Two of them were full and two were empty. Because they didn't have it yet. They didn't have the parshas.
So that year of 40, they started having four...
Yeah. What?
What I understand is that Rabbeinu Tam tefillin are higher, is a higher level than Rashi, but why don't the majority put that on instead of Rashi?
Some people say, I don't like to say half answers, let's give a complete answer. Many people write that because Rabbeinu Tam's tefillin are so holy, you need to be a holy person to wear them. You need a certain level of maturity and a certain level of holiness to wear them. Like to wear the four pairs of tefillin, Rav and Shmush Rabba, that says clearly you have to be a holy person. And the Rebbe writes on himself that the only reason he started wearing four pairs of tefillin was because his father-in-law told him to do it. So he said, it's on his head, it's fine, you know. But there were very few people... No, there's a whole order. If we read in the recent that Yom Yom, he goes, you daven in Rashi's, and then you put on this and that, and you know, it's basically after davening. But years ago in Chabad, when we were growing up, by the way, our custom, the custom in Chabad at that time was that when we got bar mitzvah, we did not wear Rabbeinu Tam's tefillin. When we turned 18, We used to go into the Rebbe every year for Yechidus for our birthday. The Bachman went in every year on the birthday, or, you know, the day before, but after, for the birthday. And the custom was, when you were 18, you went into the Rebbe for Yechidus, and at that time you asked the Rebbe, should I start wearing Rabbeinu Tam's tefillin or not? Most of the time the Rebbe said yes. But we never put it on until we were 18. Then, afterwards, in Tavshin Lamed something, the Rebbe gave a sicha, and the Rebbe said, I know about all those people that speak about not wearing Rabbeinu Tam's tefillin because you need to be holy for Rabbeinu Tam. The Rebbe said, I know all that, but the time demands that every boy from Bar Mitzvah should wear Rabbeinu Tam's tefillin. And that's when the Rebbe came out with the campaign. The Rebbe said, you have nothing to ask me anymore. I'm just telling you that the age of Bar Mitzvah, you put on Rabbeinu Tam's tefillin. And that's the custom since then, that our Bar Mitzvah kids, 2 months before when they practice already, they start putting on Rabbeinu Tam's tefillin. It didn't, you know... Yeah, Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam. I'm saying we never did that until we were 18. In the Hasidic world, not the non-Chabad Hasidic world, they put them on after they get married. But they get married at 16, so it doesn't matter. But but they don't wear them until after they get married. The difference is in the order. Yeah. According to Rabbeinu Tam, Rashi's tefillin are not kosher. According to Rashi, Rabbeinu Tam's tefillin are not kosher. Because in the order of the parshiyos, how they have to be, they write, if you change the order, they're not kosher. And the difference between Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam is in the order of the parshiyos in the tefillin. That's it.
And the head and the yod at the same time? Both
same
of
thing.
Them or just one of them?
Both. The people that only put on Rashi say them during Rashi, so... They do, but those are Rabbeinu Tam, so you need something to say. See, you need, I mean, it goes in that way. Okay, so therefore, when it says, Al Uzikarim Bein Enecha, just like we learned, by the way, Al Yodcha, on your hand, right? Normally, Yad is this. This is the Zeroa. Yet, you don't put tefillin here, the box, I'm saying, you put tefillin here. Because this is again halacha l'moshe m'Sinai, that the tefillin should be on the arm, facing the heart, you know, facing the heart, and on the head, next to the brain, so to speak, to show that you're binding our mind and our heart to God. And the reason, right? And the reason why we put on the hand tefillin first and then the head tefillin, is because if you look in the order of the pasuk. Here, at all four places. L'cho lo'es al yodcha. Then the Torah says, l'zikon im bein inecha. First the hand, then that. In Shmawis, ukshartam lo'es al yodecha. Then l'ho yolototof is bein inecha. So the Torah is saying clearly, basically, the hand tefillin comes first. Even though, according to halacha, it's two separate mitzvahs. The hand tefillin and the head tefillin are two separate mitzvahs. To give an opposite example, lulav and esrog is composed of four parts. If you're missing one of the parts, there is no mitzvah. Right? If you're missing the arava or ishan or whatever, it's not a mitzvah. On the other hand, what happens if somebody can't put tefillin on the hand? God forbid they don't have any hands. They're amputated, whatever. They still have a mitzvah of putting it on the head. What happens if somebody lost a hand tefillin? I mean, whatever the situation is. If you have one of the two, or sometimes a guy can't put on tefillin on the head. They had brain surgery, let's say, and they just can't. You know, meanwhile, put it on the head. Nevertheless, you put on the hand one on.
That's why the Ashkenazim have two brachas.
Because it's two separate mitzvahs. And in our circles, the one bracha without talking goes on both. But it's really too clearly in the amount of 613 mitzvahs. It's two separate mitzvahs. It's not counted as one. Halachically, if you have one of the two, you only put on the one that you have.
One hand is paralyzed. You use the other one, or do you use the same paralyzed hand?
It depends. No, by the way, this is not. This is something.
My father, what is the
situation? Yeah, this child becomes a lot. By the way, Even if the hands, but it's complicated. I can't say. I don't want to say. It's very complicated. Depends if there's feeling, no feeling. There's a lot of issues involved. You still, if that's the weaker hand, you still have to put it on there.
When you want to take off the tefillin, in that order, we should take the hand off first, if we put the hand first, but we took the head off first.
Right. That's because, not of these psukim, but a pasuk later in the Shema. Because it says, Ula totofos beininach, ornaments, plural. That means when the head is on, you should have both on. So if you take off the hand first, then you're having the head without the hand. And the Torah says when you have the head, it should be ornaments, plural, that you should have them both. That's the reason why you put the hand on first, because that's the order of the Chumash. And you take off the head first, because you don't want to have the hand without the head. I'm saying you don't want to have the head without the hand.
You said you have a bandage on your head, you don't put it on.
Okay. Well, sometimes, I'm saying if you can't. If
they don't. Right. Let's say your hand is in a cast. You can put it on, or you still should not put it on?
It depends. The main thing of the tefillin is the box.
The arm.
Right. Now, God forbid, if somebody has a cast from the elbow down, so they could put tefillin on with a bracha.
And you can put it up.
Because this is basically customs. The halacha is this. Okay? So if this is clear, you put tefillin on with the bracha. Yeah. If the cast goes all the way up, then you have to put the hand one without a bracha. Because it's not allowed to be a chatzitza. It can't be a separation. Because the Torah says, put it al yotcha on your hand. Right? So the Gemara learned, if the Torah says, put it on your hand, it has to be on your hand.
Why not put it on the other hand? The one that is not working.
Because that's not the one you have an obligation to do.
If the guy has a cast from
putting on the other hand, you're not yaitzeh. If a right-handed person who's supposed to put tefillin on the left decides one day to put it on the right, he didn't do the mitzvah. The wrong hand. It's like putting a mezuzah here instead of on the door. I mean, you got to put it where it's supposed to go, not where you'd like it to go. But the next, this pasuk is a very detailed pasuk. In the same pasuk test, it says, "Mantia teiras Hashem beficha," that the Torah of God should be in your mouth. Now, it's a funny expression, the Torah of God should be in your mouth. Simply, it means that Torah should be the, you know, your words should be Torah. You should speak Torah. That's the simple meaning of the pasuk. But the Gemara learns out from here a very important halacha. The Torah says, Teres Hashem Beficha, the Gemara learns out that you have to wear tefillin from something, tefillin have to be made from something that you would be allowed to eat. Which means, tefillin has to be made from a kosher animal. The Gemara says, it doesn't have to be shechted animal. It could be a killed animal that you wouldn't be allowed to eat. But it has to be from an animal that you would be allowed to eat. Meaning, you can't make tefillin from pigskin. You have to make it from a kosher animal. The Gemara learns out, Sefer Torah, tefillin, and mezuzah, which is called stam, all opinions in the Torah say must be from kosher leather, kosher parchment. The boxes also have to be made from the leather of a kosher animal. There's a very big controversy in the poskim, and the Rishenim and Achreinim, does that apply to all mitzvahs or just Sefer Torah, Tefillin, and Mezuzahs? Some poskim say only these three have to be kosher. Because the Torah says it by Tefillin. Tefillin, Sefer Torah, Mezuzah, we like it all together, right? So, by Tefillin, the Torah says it has to be a kosher animal. By other things, the Torah doesn't necessarily say it has to be kosher. What?
Like what?
I'll give you an example in a second. Other poskim say, every mitzvah has to be from kosher stuff. Every mitzvah must be from kosher stuff. Other opinions say, only biblical mitzvahs have to be from kosher stuff. But rabbinic mitzvahs, you don't need kosher stuff. I'll give you a simple example. Can somebody use trefa oil for Hanukkah candles?
No. Yeah.
Ah. Maybe. The classic example. I want to do a mitzvah. I need to light Hanukkah candles or Shabbos candles. Nowadays we don't have them. But you know, in the olden days, they used to make candles from animal fats. That's what they made candles from. Mamish schmaltz. The fats of an animal. So the question is, did somebody need kosher candles or kosher oil? You know, do you need a hechsher on your olive oil that you want to use for Hanukkah? Or maybe what happens if somebody mixes trefoil oil in there? Are you allowed to use it for Hanukkah? I mean, you have cases. The way we paskin is that by rabbinic mitzvahs you could use non-kosher oil. Because it's only by biblical mitzvahs, not by rabbinic mitzvahs. But some people say only Sefer Torah Tefillin and Mezuzos. The parchment has to be kosher animal. The leather has to be a kosher animal.
So the
animal has to be shecht kosher. No. The Gemara says even from the nevelo trefa, even if it's just killed or died, it doesn't matter. It has to come from a kosher animal.
That's it.
Okay. While you're on the subject, what about these leather chairs in the house? They have leather chairs and they're made out of pigskin. And the guy make a bracha while he's sitting with the tefillin in his leather chair.
No problem.
No problem.
No.
You're not eating it. You're using it.
You're using it for your country.
If you eat a football, you don't make a bracha.
Football.
It's pigskin.
Yeah.
That you don't make a bracha. Depends if you get a touchdown or not. You know what I mean? Depends what you're throwing. Interception, you don't make a bracha. Some people make dino emes, you know? A loss. But whatever. Huh? Yeah, lost article. Okay, so it says, Matia teres Hashem beficha. So that the Gemara learns out, like we said, it has to be from a kosher animal. Why should you know this? What's the concept of the sign of tefillin? Kibiyot chazaka, that with a strong hand, Hetziach Hashem Mitzrayim, Hashem took you out of Egypt. So this is basically this concept. And then he says, V'shamarta sachuka azeis l'meyada, you should keep this mitzvah at his designated time, miyamim yamima, from year to year. So Rashi is there, mishana l'shana, from year to year. But some poskim write that this is the source, the fact that the Torah says, yamim yamima, literally means day to day, that's the source that you have to wear tefillin the whole day. I mean, every day. Because it said, miyamim yamima, from day to day, you should wear tefillin every day. In the olden times, people used to wear tefillin a whole day. An entire day they wore tefillin. Nowadays, the generations got weaker and lower, and you can't have the proper thoughts a whole day in tefillin like your person is obligated to have. So now we wear them only during davening. Because davening is the time a person is supposed to be controlling what they're thinking anyway. So that's the time that you could wear the tefillin. Now, not wearing tefillin at night, it's interesting. The reason why you don't wear tefillin at night is different than tzitzis. Tzitzis, the Torah says, Ureisem Eisei. You should see it. So the Gemara learns, you see by day, not at night, because there's no lights at night. It's dark. So the Gemara says, tzitzis, you can't wear at night. I mean, you could, but there's no obligation of wearing, so to speak, tzitzis at night, even though there is. But what the Torah says, there isn't. Tefillin is a different story. The Gemara says, you're not allowed to wear tefillin at night, even though it doesn't say anywhere, day or night or whatever. So it says, one of the reasons why a person can't wear tefillin at night, the Gemara says, is because you might fall asleep in the tefillin. When you fall asleep, you might be passing gas, you might be doing things which are not proper, and tefillin need proper bodily behavior, so to speak. So that's what the Chachamim made a takana, you're not allowed to wear tefillin at night.
So there's nothing to do with the ladies, the mitzvah, that has to do with time.
The reason why tefillin is a mitzvah connected to time is because it's only during the week and not in Shabbat.
And that's also rabbinic.
No, because the Torah says la'ais. If you have another ace, you don't have to. According to biblically, you don't wear tefillin on Shabbos. So because it's connected to 6 days a week, not Shabbos, that's why women don't wear tefillin. You put it on any time.
You can't
the Torah doesn't say anywhere. Yeah. What do we do to Shabbat? No, Maariv is already at night.
Night, yeah.
At night, you don't wear tefillin because the rabbi said you might fall asleep in Rosh Hashanah. But you might fall asleep. But
is it a mitzvah if you put the tefillin on during mincha?
In the olden times, they used to wear tefillin for mincha. The customers, you don't. But if somebody didn't wear tefillin in the morning, tefillin has nothing to do with davening, by the way. There's a mitzvah of tefillin, there's a mitzvah of davening. We just do two together because it's time. It's a good time to wear tefillin. But if a guy didn't put tefillin on in the morning, you should put it on the whole day until sundown.
So if he puts it on for 1 second,
that's the mitzvah. Custom is you say Shema because it's accepting the yoke of God. What?
Let's say a person, for whatever reason, they couldn't daven Shachrit in the morning, and it becomes Mincha time. Do they do Mincha or do they do Shachrit?
Depends if you're a Chabadnik or not a Chabadnik. According to Halacha, what you're supposed to do, daven two Minchas. That's what Halacha says.
With tefillin.
Huh?
With tefillin.
No, if you didn't wear tefillin, you wear tefillin. I mean, you put tefillin on, but...
Why do you take tefillin off at Musa?
Because Rosh Chodesh is like a little Yom Tif. So, for the Yom Tif of Rosh Chodesh, so to speak, we don't want to be wearing the tefillin. To show the sanctity of Rosh Chodesh, so to speak. For Musaf. You take it off before you daven Musaf.
Because of what?
Because we want to make Rosh Chodesh into a little holiday, by so to speak, at that time. So we take it off. Some people are above time and place. The Rebbe didn't like it, by the way.
Since tefillin is very important, how come from all the parts of Torah it just says that they put it? You have to remember that you came from Egypt and you have to sell your firstborn.
Right.
I mean, you should put the Ten Commandments or something way more important that is more.
You mean why don't we have the Ten Commandments in the tefillin?
I guess naturally.
That's a good question.
More important.
It's hard to say more important. Everything has its place.
Right.
The concept of binding the mind, and the fact that Ramban, we just didn't get there yet, but the Ramban explains the connection between tefillin and Yetzias Mitzrayim and the Kabbalah, so Malchus Shemaim, the acceptance of the yoke, and the Shema Yisrael. Basically, fundamental Judaism is that God took us out of Egypt. That's why all the mitzvahs constantly in the Torah says, Zechel Yitzias Mitzrayim, Zechel Yitzias Mitzrayim. Remember going out of Egypt. Everything is going out of Egypt, right?
Right.
Ten Commandments. Anecha Hashem Elokecha took you out of Mitzrayim. Everything is Yitzias Mitzrayim. Because the whole concept of Yitzias Mitzrayim is fundamental because the exodus of Egypt proves that Hashem created the world. Hashem made the Jews into slaves. And the whole concept of Judaism is to go out of your own personal Egypt.
Yeah.
Meaning, Egypt refers to your limitations and your confines and your boundaries and your limitations. And the Torah says, the whole concept of Judaism is going out of bondage. And that is accomplished by binding your mind and heart to God. The intellect and the feelings have to be bound to God. And that's why tefillin, you can't wear tefillin, the hand tefillin going out that way.
Right.
You know, they have to be here, facing this way, because they have to be facing the heart. Because the whole concept of Yiddishkeit is binding the mind and heart to God. If a person binds their mind and heart to God, I'll tell you what, they don't sin. You can't sin if you bind your mind and heart to God. All your temptations are bound to God. So that's the whole concept of Shema. That's the whole concept of tefillin. Yeah. Why not? Sad? They're not sad. What tefes?
No, six. Wait,
you put seven. The seven midas. Here you make, well, Chabad makes the shin here.
Yeah.
You have the seven midas, and here, this is Dalid, and this is Yud. Yeah. So you get the name Shaddai. Some people make the shin here, and the Dalid here. Some people do a whole bunch of other things. So it's all customs, whichever way you do it, it's fine. Who's the we? Oh, okay. You're holier. Jews never agree on anything. Okay.